it just takes time to get into that state of mm-hmm. like complete flow. It takes time to shut off the outside world.
Yeah,
it takes more than just a few hours. It takes the whole day, and it takes a lot of failed attempts. And something I've really realized this year is like the moment that you're about to call it a day and go home, when you're thinking like, oh, I've been here 8 hours now and nothing much has been happening. You know, I've written a couple of mediocre themes and nothing great. And you decide, or you're thinking about, okay, I'm just going to pack up and go home and I'll try again tomorrow. That exact moment is the most important moment in creating stuff. It's the moment where you're about to hit something great.
Welcome to Why Not Both, the podcast dedicated to exploring the ways that we can lead our most creative, passionate, multifaceted lives. Over the last several years, I have had the pleasure and privilege to interview over 100 creative artists. And each time I had one of these conversations, I thought to myself, oh, this is it. This is the most magical conversation I've ever had. And I wasn't wrong. Each of them were absolutely beautiful and inspiring and heartrending in their own ways. But what I found is that sometimes it took weeks, months, even years to really understand some of the things that I had the chance to talk to people about. So I started going back and started listening to some of the episodes that I had done. And I realized that I was learning these old lessons that I thought I had learned in these conversations, but that I had changed, that I was different. So I was learning these old ways through new eyes. And that's something that I wanted to offer to you. If you are a longtime listener, you will have heard these episodes before, but I invite you to listen to them through your lens now. Maybe your experiences over the last few years have changed you, and so you're going to come to these episodes with new eyes. And if you're a new listener, that's super exciting. You get to hear all of the wonderful insights that these artists have had. And then in a few years' time, you get to listen to them again and see what changed. So please drop me some comments, some notes. Feel free to DM me about these episodes. I'm really curious what you think of them and what you took from them. I will be saying the main themes that I took from them. And I just am excited to have this ongoing conversation. Thank you so much for tuning in. This episode of Full Circle features my interview with the composer and musician Oliver Arnolds. And truth be told, he was the person that inspired this entire series. So he recently posted on his Instagram that he was re-releasing an album of his from 10 years ago. And in his announcement, he was going over footage of himself recording this album. And it was really sweet to see the way that he spoke of his old self. Like, he acknowledged that he was his new self. However, he was able to see the ideas that his old self had and honor them in such a way that really spoke to me, especially knowing that he actually is nominated this year for a Grammy for his piano reworkings of his album Some Kind of Peace, which we spoke of extensively in this interview, and that album is based around a lot of the concepts of appreciating the beauty around you and also the beauty within you when perhaps you are in a situation that you had not anticipated, that you were not in control of, or if you are isolated in a way or feel that you've been cut off from the world. And just looking at the way that he treated those ideas and the fact that he went back to those themes and found a new way to express those, that to me was truly inspiring and really formed my idea for why I would go back through these interviews, why I would share these things again, is really that all old ideas are new again. if you look at them through different eyes. So I invite you to listen to our interview and to check out the show notes where you can go and listen to all of Ollie's music. I'm going to link to his albums and also check out Opia, which is his new music collective and traveling festival shenanigan. He explains it much better on his website. And without further ado, this is my conversation with Oliver Arnolds.
Welcome to Why Not Both?
Yeah.
Like you are. In honor of interviewing you while you're in Iceland, I did light some of the incense from Fisher in my living room.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. Very sweet. Yep.
That's like, they do smell very nice.
Oh my God. I feel like a little like dragon hoarding it because I'm very far away now and can't just like readily buy more. But every time I light it, it feels like a really special occasion. I'm like, yes. So how have you been during all of the shenanigans of 2020?
I mean, I do live in Iceland. It's not as hard here as a lot of other places, and we're very fortunate for that. But at the same time, I'm kind of a sensitive one. So I often feel as the world is sitting on my shoulders through all of this. And I think in the beginning, it was pretty hard. But we all, you know, we find our pockets of where we feel safe and good, mm-hmm. you know, our little communities to hang around with. And I've just been concentrating a lot on music, actually, and kind of trying to see this all as an opportunity for transitions and change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because usually, at least I found when I was there, that during the summer, usually people are out and about so much that then it's during the winter that I would imagine you would get more done. But like this time, it's like no one was out and about at all, really, for a while.
Well, our summer here was actually COVID-free. So we were all out and about and hugging and living a normal life for like 4 months, maybe, before it came back. So that was quite wonderful. We actually had a summer. We traveled around, and it was really special because we traveled around Iceland with no tourists. And that was quite unique to see all the, to go back to places that I haven't been to for like 10, 15 years, because I wouldn't dare to go there because there's like 1,000 people there and there's mm-hmm. nothing special about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you're going to like these famous tourist places like the geysers and stuff and be the only person there, which was quite
magical. Oh, wow. Yeah, what was that like rediscovering where you were?
I think it's one of these good things that the pandemic can bring us. I think we're used to always looking across the ocean for something to do. You know, the grass is always greener on the other side, and I think we've gotten kind of used to not seeing what's in our backyards. And the pandemic kind of forces us to look a bit closer and rediscover what's around us. And I think that can be a really positive result of all of this. And hopefully that continues. We don't always need to fly half across the planet just to have a holiday. We can actually drive half an hour and find beautiful things. And Icelanders in general, I think, have always felt really small. And we always have this need to go to see the big outside world, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think this has taught us a lot about that. So for me, it was quite special to go to some of these places that I just wouldn't go to anymore because they're just not that special when there's 1,000 people there holding their selfie sticks. And, you know, it's just weird.
That does take away from the natural beauty. I remember my friend Maggie brought me to, it was like what I could best describe as field of sulfuric, very hot water bubbling up from the earth. And
close to the airport or close to Reykjavik?
It was close to Reykjavik. It was, I believe on the peninsula. but there was a sign that was just like, stay on the wood path. And I was just like, who would step off the wood path here? Like, literally, there's like
a lot of people do.
That was what he said, is he's just like, and there wasn't anyone there when I was there. So I was just like, he took me to apparently a very obscure one, but it was like, I was like, people do that. And he's like, oh, you have no idea. It's like,
no, it's sad. Like, so many of these, because tourism happened so fast here that the infrastructure just wasn't quite ready. I think we didn't really think of, you know, putting all these protections in place for our environment before we would have a couple of million people a year stepping on them. So right. A lot of places got kind of trodden down, if you can say that, by the amount of people just walking there. You know, they're not necessarily doing anything bad, but just like when you have a million people walking somewhere, you're going to have new paths being created and the grass is going to go away. And it's you very quickly kind of ruin the natural beauty of the place, the kind of untouched quality that draws people here in the first place.
Right. Well, yeah, and that makes total sense that, like, even if people aren't, say, like, going off the path, you are certainly going to carve a path in something where there hadn't been a path prior.
Yeah. And often that you see these little paths slowly getting wider and wider and wider until they look like a highway, you know. And that's just not a nice look.
Nope, not what you're going for. And also, I mean, at least in my experience where I was driving, like, the foliage is so distinctive because you don't have, like, the large trees, that I would imagine it would take a while for it to regrow because it's so funny. I was just like, I don't know if people listening know how incredibly windy it is in your country.
Yeah, things don't grow very fast. And a lot of our green is actually moss. It's not grass, it's moss. And moss takes over 100 years to regrow if you...
Oh, wow.
If you pull it out, yeah.
I have renewed respect for the moss.
Yeah.
I was like, not that I was like disrespecting the moss before, but I was like, I didn't know it took that long to grow.
Yeah, because it grows directly on lava. It's growing on rocks. It's not growing in soil. So it takes a very long time to grow.
Huh. It's funny because I do remember touching some of the moss there, but not with my feet. Like, I was literally, like, I was on a roadside and I was, like, leaning over just to see what it felt like. Like, I was very delicately poking at it. And it was such an interesting kind of, like, loamy texture. But I was very cognizant of, like, don't step on it. I didn't know that it took 100 years to regrow. But it just looked sort of, like, sacred in the way of, like, this is for looking and maybe very delicate touching, but this is not for standing on.
No, it's okay if one person does it, but it's just, if everyone does it, it's going to get destroyed. So we kind of do it, but we tell everyone not to. We feel like it's our right to enjoy the softness of the moss. Like, it's just one, like, laying down in moss in the summer is just amazing. It's like a soft bed.
Oh, but my gosh.
Everyone who comes here, we tell them it's strictly forbidden to step on the moss.
Forbidden. Yeah, that's not like moss angels. That's really funny. And I would imagine, like, actually having that summer, did that inform any of the writing you've been doing this year? Because so many of us didn't really get a summer. And also, like, I don't know what your normal writing is like based on who you can collaborate with, what projects you're working on. Like, did that match your normal workflow or was that different for you?
Most of the album was finished before summer, but it was not all finished before the pandemic. So I had written maybe half of it before the pandemic struck, and I did the other half during the first couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely, I wouldn't say it really changed the direction of the album, but as I was already kind of in this, I was already making an album that was way more introverted. It was all about, like, human connection and rituals and community and relationships. And when the pandemic hit, it was more kind of like confirming that direction. It was, it was reinforcing that direction rather than changing it. But then also it recontextualizes it, which I find quite interesting, because without having created an album about COVID, you know, I don't really want to do that. Like, it's not that interesting of a thing to write music about, in my opinion. and right. which also it would probably just become very dated in a few years, and nobody wants to listen to the COVID album in 3 years. We'll be so glad when this is over that we'll never want to think of this time again. But exactly. It's really interesting to see it being recontextualized by mm-hmm. the pandemic, and you know, like the title "Some Kind of Peace" suddenly just fit perfectly, and it can be something that provides peace or a safe haven for people during these months or years, without having to be specifically written as a result of that.
Well, yeah, that kind of that turning inward, but not in a way of excluding other people, but more like that deep, that kind of turning inward for peacefulness. And it almost sounds like it mirrors like returning to the places that you hadn't been in like 10 to 15 years, but you returned alone.
Yeah, I think, I mean, even though it wasn't maybe directly inspired by that, it's definitely, that can definitely be a nice metaphor for what was happening. Yeah.
So I was thinking of, you know, the effects of isolation, that like, even when you said earlier that you were like, and we got to hug our friends, and I found myself blurting out, oh my gosh, you got hugs.
Well, I hug everybody now because I had COVID. So I'm like the hugger in my friend group.
Oh my God.
I can safely hug my friends.
What was your experience like with that? What happened?
It's a bit shit. Like I didn't have it really bad. I had it much better than a lot of people do, but it definitely is not the nicest virus that I've encountered. It's very uncomfortable. And it's also just with everything going on, it's kind of a shock to be diagnosed with it.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about for the last half a year is suddenly you are a part of it. And that, like, just mentally, that's it can be quite a shock.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm mostly worried about the kind of after symptoms, the post-COVID symptoms
that
I'm experiencing, as a lot of people have. Even the people who've been symptomless, a lot of them experience like headaches or, you know, short-term memory loss or lack of focus, and that's happened to me as well. The flu itself wasn't too bad. I've had worse flus. It was a pretty bad flu, but afterwards I find like I have very little tolerance for looking at computer screens for too long. Mm-hmm. I get headaches really easily. If I exercise, sometimes I totally crash. You know, I have no energy, and mm-hmm. it's definitely getting better. But it's been some time of where I've had to like be really careful and take it really easy.
Oof! I'm sorry you're experiencing that.
Oh, it's all fine. I don't need to be complaining. like I said, I've had friends who got it and had it a lot worse than I did. So yeah. I don't want to. But anyway, I get free hugs.
Yeah, it was just like, especially, and that's interesting what you said about, you know, when I've had several friends test positive as well, and thankfully, like, my friends have been okay, but have, much like you've described, it's a strange sensation to be like, oh, I'm part of that group now. Because. Yeah. I mean, did you then have to isolate for the 14 days? Like, at least here, it's like, it's so strange. I'd almost compare it to like, not like a sexually transmitted disease, but the same thing where it's like, there's this weird stigma of like, well, what did you do? And you're like, well, I breathed. Like there was yes. something where I breathed at an inopportune moment. Like,
yeah. And I'm someone who's always been careful. And by the way, I don't mean to, like, I was joking when I say I hug everybody. I know that's actually not safe to do, even though I've had it.
Because no, I know.
Always be a spreader. So I you know, I don't actually do that.
But, I didn't anticipate that. Don't worry.
But yeah, like, you're as careful as you can be, but yet it can get you, you know. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah. That sounds very surreal.
The isolation was the strange part, I think, mm-hmm. just being completely isolated, because we never had a full lockdown here. So I think that was my first real experience of being locked inside my apartment for, a little over 2 weeks. I had to be.
Oh my goodness.
Not seeing anyone, not getting fresh air, you know.
Yeah. I was going
to. And at some point you start to feel like this this is also what's keeping you sick.
Yes.
You're not getting better because you can't go out and like touch the rain, you know?
Yeah. I was like, do you at least have a patio? Do you have a balcony?
I do have a balcony. Yeah. I went on the balcony every day.
Oof, okay.
But it's not the same, I guess.
Yeah.
I like to feel the grass under my feet.
Yeah. I feel for you. That happened to some of my friends here where it's like we've had various stages of lockdown, I would say, and various success or not in regards to whether people were following that. But yeah, that's been really my point of sanity in this, is that I do have like a little patio balcony. And I think without that, it would have been like, oh, that would have been really grim.
I really feel for people who live in places like New York where the apartments are tiny.
Yeah.
Generally don't have balconies.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, like hearing about the theme of your album about turning inward, there's a difference like turning inward when it's a choice versus turning inward when someone's like, you're locked in your home now.
Yes, but perhaps also an even greater learning thing that can happen when it's not your choice. If you're just staying at home because you want to stay at home, you're not actually learning anything from that. But if it is a challenge, if someone is forcing you to stay at home, you're kind of forced to look at things in your life that you maybe wouldn't do otherwise. So I'm just trying to find positive things in everything.
I don't blame you. Going through all that, I was like, yeah, definitely looking for where are the bright spots in this. I would be doing the exact same thing and have been doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because I think about, especially with, you know, like looking kind of at your back catalog and looking at this, like you have done a lot of collaborations, but I would imagine that would be very different right now. And also you can't tour around your album.
Yeah. Interestingly, a lot of collaborations are happening these days. It's almost like there's more than before. I think especially at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was so kind of freaked out and people responded by trying to be hyper productive.
Yeah.
Which was a really interesting period. Like, we're all locked at home now and we can't do anything. So this is a great opportunity to make a lot of music. Me, myself included. And I don't think I ever got so many collaboration requests and people contacting me for collaborations as in like a 2 or 3 week period, until seemingly everyone suddenly realized that perhaps a devastating pandemic killing hundreds of thousands of people is not the best environment to be creative.
Yeah.
And then it's somehow slowed down.
Yep.
But yeah, collaborations are I think really important these days, and I am doing a lot of them, and it's just sending files back and forth. But obviously, yeah, no touring, and I don't know when touring will happen again, honestly, because even if it becomes safe to be in a room with a few thousand people again, then we are kind of at risk of losing the infrastructure of our industry. All the venues are closing down, a lot of them permanently, and also like the behind the scenes stuff, like backline rentals, know, live industry companies, like even the tour bus rentals, they're all bankrupt now. So when we can tour again, I think it will still take a while until we actually do, because who is going to support it? So I don't know when that's happening again. So, again, looking at the positive sides, it is an opportunity for us to maybe question our ways a little bit. Like, I like to ask the question to myself nowadays, like, why do I tour? I do love touring, but it's just interesting to ask that question. Why am I doing it? And what is it that I'm missing from it right now? What is it that can be replaced by some of the tools that we have? And or is there anything that can be replaced by them? And I've found kind of a couple of main things that I believe are the main reasons for why, at least me personally, I tour, because it's the community aspect. Like, music is a communal effort. a song is not a song unless there's someone listening to it, because it doesn't have any meaning until someone hears it. Like, the meaning of the song gets created by your own interpretation of the song. Mm. And live music provides that environment for us to do that together as a community and feel the energy of the music together, which mm-hmm. is super important and probably not something we can ever replace by anything else. But live shows are also an opportunity for us to tell the story of our music in ways that we can't do with just a cover photo on the album or a social media post. live shows offer us an opportunity to stand on stage in front of thousands of people and actually tell them the story.
Yes.
And there and tell, I can tell anecdotes, I can tell stories about the song. And even for artists who don't like to tell stories on stage, they still are, because people see them, they see their personality and they sense their energy, and then
yes.
they gain a more deep understanding of what the music means or where it comes from. And this part, I think we can work with. We have opportunities to tell the stories of the music in other ways. So I'm kind of focusing on that part.
That's really interesting to hear about how you view, like, how one shares music. It was interesting what you said about the communal aspect of making the meaning of music, because people can listen to music on their headphones, they can listen really in whatever context they want and make their own meaning. But that's really different than when you're there with the artist and the artist is creating a live experience with you. That's going to have a completely different meaning.
Exactly. It's such an amazing platform for exactly that, to give the music context. And I mean, like I said, you don't have to do that by telling stories literally. You can do that by how the lights are designed, you know. Mm-hmm. Is it a really cozy setup with the living room type of lighting setup, or is it that EDM style flashing lights? You know, that all of those little things tell a story, and just mm-hmm. how you interact with the other musicians on stage, it's also a story that you're telling. It's also a feeling that you're giving people, and it's a context that you're giving people, which is so important. And for me, that's kind of what draws me to touring, is that storytelling aspect.
Yeah, because it seems like that would be a completely different experience. Like, I'm thinking of that, of especially like contrasting that with, say, like the scoring work that you've done for shows, that like that's telling a story in such a different way. That I'm like, that you can do right now, but you can't go out and actually have like a live communal experience.
Yeah, yeah. But multimedia, like doing videos and stuff, is, I think, the way that we can do a similar thing right now. We can tell a story through music videos, or we can make live streams where we talk about stuff, or we can somehow create a community around what we're doing, even though we're stuck online.
Yes. Have you been doing any scoring work lately? I know that it's so weird, like being in LA, that my friends who are working in like animation and writing have been super busy. And then my friends who work like in live action stuff are like productions are sort of getting started.
Yeah. No, I haven't, but it's not only because of the pandemic. It's I just decided late last year that I would take kind of a break from that. I really wanted to concentrate on music that was telling my own story mm-hmm. instead of telling other people's stories. I felt like I had something to say, and I just decided to back out of everything. I had a few projects kind of on the horizon that I just backed out of, and yeah, decided to fully concentrate on this album and everything surrounding that. And there are some things slowly starting up now. There hasn't been anything coming in even for the summer, because all the productions were just halted. But
yeah,
people are finding ways. You know, we're humans. We always find our ways to do stuff that we want to do.
We're crafty. So
I think by early next year, we're going to see more things coming out again.
And I really respect that you did take the time to focus on your own, because I think that can be really difficult when you are kind of juggling multiple things. To be like, well, I'm going to take this time to just focus on my story. And I'm like, I definitely did like a little like heck yeah face because I was just like, yeah, story is awesome. It deserves to be told. Go do it.
Yeah, exactly. I also found that by doing so many things, it was so hard to do that properly. If half of my mind was on the TV project and the other half on my album was not going to be what I wanted my album to be. It needed my full undivided attention and all my creative energy to go into it.
Well, yeah, it almost sounds like there's different seasons for things, and that there are some things that, you know, it sounds like this was the season of making your album. And it's like, yes, all right, this is what we're doing.
It's just I'm just not interested at the moment in doing a movie or a TV show. But I will be again, I'm sure.
But right
now, this is the story that I need to be telling.
And what is that like when you immerse yourself in someone else's story? Because that seems like it would be very consuming. And I would totally understand how then it would take creative energy away from your own story.
Yeah, I don't do any project unless that it's fully consuming. I don't think I do good work unless I become all consumed by the project. That's when you actually create good work. So if it's a story that, you know, then it's important that there's a story that you like and that you want to be completely deep in for some months. But yeah, it can really take over your life. And it can be weird because, again, it's not your story. So
yeah,
it can be a bit funny to handle the balance of that and your own life. And you're also working with different time zones, and you're working with people who can often be very demanding, like directors or producers who want a lot from you. And I usually end up working the longest days when I'm working on TV or film projects.
Yes. Well, that's interesting, because in some ways, like, the story does have to be compelling, but at least I've found with scoring work, like, I sometimes like delving into other people's emotions. I find, like, other people's emotions and other stories to not be easier than my own story, but it's almost relaxing to kind of slip into someone else's emotional palette and be like, oh, I just have to make that emotional palette make sounds.
Yeah, it's much easier to hide behind someone else's ideas than to expose the vulnerability of your own ideas.
Are you sure you can call me out like that?
No, but I'm talking from my own experience too. I find doing other people's stories to be a nice break from what happens inside my head. and it's in a way much less vulnerable as an artist to work with. To work with a concept or a story that you can actually place in front of you instead of exposing all of you through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of stories would you say compel you the most when someone presents something to you and they're like, hey, I want to score for this? What are some of the things that actually do draw you to a project?
In the past, it's been very personal stories, or like, and I've been drawn to kind of stories without much flair and just about the subtleties of communication and like families or friendships and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that changing now, and I'm actually, maybe it's just because I did a lot of that, Broadchurch and and all these shows that I did and films that I did, they were kind of generally focused on those things. But now I feel maybe more interested in otherworldly things, even though I haven't done much of that yet. That's kind of what I imagine doing next. Maybe more philosophical, sci-fi based stuff.
Ooh.
I think my favorite show recently was Devs.
Oh yeah?
That's something that shows in that style, like, that are kind of sci-fi but also go very deep into human nature and and philosophical questions about the future of our relationship with technology, and even comes down to religion at some point, you know. Those things are something that I'm very interested in writing music for.
I just got really excited for like several years in the future, you.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm also a bit all over the place, so I can want something completely different next week.
You're like, next week it's only moss, stories about moss, that's all I'm What else have you been doing in like in Reykjavik in general? I guess because when you said like things were open for a while and then they weren't, and how different it is without tourists. And like, I mean, I feel strange because like I'm a tourist when I'm there and I'm like, what have you been doing not in lockdown? Because I have been talking to musicians who have discovered other things that they like doing, but they were mostly in the US and like it was very locked down, or they had to leave the US and go somewhere else during lockdown. Mm-hmm. But I was like, did you discover anything new within your own city?
In the last months, even though we've not been on a strict lockdown or anything, I've been kind of hyper focused on this album release. So mm-hmm. I've been actually just working very hard.
You're like, Pam, I've been hiding.
Yeah, so I could just as well be in lockdown, actually.
That's really funny.
So I don't know. I don't think I've been doing all that much outside of my studio and in my home. I've been working too much, and it's been affecting my health because I go overboard with these things. So just last weekend I bought a Nintendo Switch computer, so I could relax and play some video games. I haven't played video games for like 10 years, I'm just obsessed with Zelda now, and that's all I want to do. It's literally what I'm thinking about now. It's like, I can't wait to go home to play more Zelda. So that's a new discovery for me. Video games, I think they're wonderful. They can be such a beautiful escape.
Yes!
And a meditation in a way. And I like these kind of open world games where you just roam around in a fictional world and just like go foraging for some berries and fight some monsters.
Casual.
It's getting cold here now, so I'm not really going outside
yes.
to the nature that much.
Yes. That's really funny that you're like, well, I have rediscovered that I love video games.
Yeah, I used to love them as a teenager. I played a lot of video games, and it was always kind of a nice, I guess it was a bit of an escape, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I found a lot of comfort in them as a teenager. And I guess the same is happening now. There's a lot of stress
mm-hmm.
in all our lives these days. And I think video games are quite healthy for all of us right now.
I think
depending on what video games, of course, I don't think we should be getting addicted to Candy Crush, you know, or I don't think that's very good for our brains, but there's a lot of beautiful video games out there that I think can just be very healthy to get lost in sometimes.
Well, yeah, that escapism and that play, because our brains sometimes do need a break.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That's funny. I remember as a kid falling asleep with like literally like I could almost see like the little Tetris blocks like falling under my eyelids as I was like falling asleep, because I would like play on my Game Boy before bed.
Yeah, that's been happening to me. I've been dreaming Zelda, actually. I tend to play it late at night before I go to sleep, so
mm-hmm.
that's probably not healthy, actually, to be in front of the screen so late.
I'm glad that you found something to escape a bit into, because you know, when you said that you don't work on something unless it compels you, I have a similar temperament. But it's important to not like go completely overboard in that way of
yeah.
like boring things like yeah. play and taking care of yourself in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I generally have a problem with that. Not going overboard with the things I do. But also there's this big part of me that believes that going overboard is necessary. It's the necessary difference between good and great
like
in terms of making music. I can come to the studio and spend 4 or 5 hours a day here, and I'll make music, I'll make an album, and it'll be a good album, but it won't be great. I really believe that the really good writing sessions, they happen when you spend like way too much time, and, you know, and like 16-hour days. Like yeah. that's when I do, in my opinion, great stuff. Because there's always this, it just takes time to to get into that state of mm-hmm. like complete flow, it takes time to shut off the outside world.
Yeah,
it takes more than just a few hours. It takes the whole day, and it takes a lot of failed attempts. And something I've really realized this year is like the moment that you're about to call it a day and go home, when you're thinking like, oh, I've been here 8 hours now and nothing much has been happening. You know, I've written a couple of mediocre themes and nothing great. And you decide, or you're thinking about, okay, I'm just going to pack up and go home and I'll try again tomorrow. That exact moment is the most important moment in creating stuff. It's the moment where you're about to hit something great. It's just beyond that little fatigue moment. I've read a lot about this theory of flow state, and that theory talks about how in order to enter flow state, which is the optimum state of your mind for being creative, you need to have a perfect balance of like your skill, what you can do, and then the challenge at hand. So if things are too easy, you're not going to enter that state. If things are too difficult, you're not going to enter it either. So I think that's why this moment where things are actually becoming difficult and you're actually about to give up, that's the moment where that line is about to match up completely, that XY axis of challenge or ability versus difficulty. That's the moment where it's about to hit the right point. And so I've learned a lot from that, to actually stay in those moments, stay for an hour more. When you really feel like going home, stay for a little longer, and it, like 90% of the time, something good will happen.
Yes. Yes. You can't see me.
But you'll be really tired the next
day. You'll be really pooped. Yeah. It's worth it.
But that's just what it needs. You do need that little overboard attitude to things to achieve something which is above your expectations.
Yeah, because you can always then like edit it and polish it the next day, but that is like where the best ideas tend to come from. Like, I completely agree with you on that, where I can do kind of like almost like edits, or you know, going in and making like frameworks for things in that kind of beginning 4 or 5 hours, or even like sometimes I'll spend like, I'm like, oh, I had a client day today, like I work as a therapist as well. Usually on those days, that's when I'll set up like scaffolding for myself for songs. But I know that I'm not going to super get into that flow state after I've already been like expending my emotional energy. So that way on the days when I have it, then I can like build up to it, but that scaffolding is there already for me. And so then it's like really fun. Then on music days, I'm just like, ha ha, like, we're just going to skate through this, forget to eat food. It's going to be great.
that happens to me too.
That's so weird.
But also eating, I've learned that eating actually, it takes up so much, like, I think digestion takes up so much energy from your brain.
And yes.
If I eat too much during the day, I won't be as creative.
I'm
much more creative when I skip eating. So I guess what we're saying is that it's making good things is going to be very unhealthy for you.
I always joke that like people, you know, I don't know if you get this, but people think it's like somehow like glamorous to be a musician. And you're like, no, I'm sort of like this little feral creature poking at keyboards for the most part. Like, you know.
Yeah. 99% of the time, nothing glamorous is happening at all.
Exactly. That's so funny what you said about eating. That's why, like, I never thought I'd be the sort of person that, like, likes bubbly water. But, like, I really like carbonated water when I'm working on music, because it's just, like, interesting enough that, like, I think I'm eating.
Yeah. And it fills up your stomach just a tiny bit more than flat water.
Yeah. Yes, but like same thing.
I this reminds me of when I mixed my there was an album in 2010, so 10 years ago, that I did called And They Have Escaped the Weight of Darkness. And I mixed it with a mixing partner named Barry Johansson, who's from the band Bang Gang, that was quite popular in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we went to his house in the countryside for a week to mix the album. And I don't know why we were just in a weird mood. We decided that as a rule through this whole mixing session, we were not allowed to eat anything healthy. It's some sort of arbitrary rule that we set up. So we survived off chocolates and licorice for a week.
Oh my God.
We were very focused and we did a lot, but then I came home and I was just sick for 3 days.
Oh no.
Horrible idea.
Oh, yeah, that's so funny. Oh my God. That's funny you say that. My other pod mate, he wanted to have a movie night. I was like, oh, I wonder what I could bring over to make it special. And I had my last chocolate bar, actually, from Reykjavik. It was one of the chocolate bars with the black licorice and sea salt. And he was like,
I know exactly the one.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how to put it other than like, I actually really like the petrol station brand ones better than like the really like bougie one. those are the ones that I hoard like a very normal person. And that was what I brought. And he's like, what is this? I was like, just trust me. I was like, we're gonna have a movie night, we're gonna write our intentions for the month, and we're gonna eat some really awesome Icelandic chocolate. Like, little did he know it was like junk food chocolate from the last time I was at a gas station there.
But those are the best. Icelanders have a very funny relationship with licorice. We are completely obsessed with licorice, and every time, like, every foreigner who comes here who like we kind of make them go through this rite of passage. Like, what? You don't like licorice? That can't be. You just haven't tried our licorice.
Oh my God, that's the conversation.
We just force it to them until, yeah. No, we just force it on them until they like it. And people eventually do. I think the licorice that you have in America is kind of like medicine. We don't like that either, actually.
God, yeah, that stuff's really cool.
But yeah, we're very proud of our licorice traditions, and we eat a lot of it. My friend is an emergency room doctor, and she keeps telling me how incredibly unhealthy it is to eat these kind of amounts of licorice. It does something to your liver.
Oh my
and
God.
They get like regularly, they get people in with some liver problems that are directly related to eating too much licorice. She's always like, there's three things in life that I won't do. I won't go on a racer bike, I won't smoke, and I won't eat licorice. Like, that's her experience as an ER doctor.
I'm just wondering, I'm like, how much licorice must you consume to end up in the ER?
Yeah, I haven't found out yet, thankfully.
Yeah, I was like, that mixing session didn't get you there. So I'm like, small blessing. No. Oh, that is so funny. You're right, though. The licorice there, I was appropriately initiated at the gas station. Maggie, aka Mighty Bear, bought like multiple kinds of like licorice and then like different candies with licorice in them so that I would have like a sample platter. And it was like...
Yeah, we put licorice in everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if you had told me, because like you said, like the licorice here is kind of disgusting, frankly, to me at least. Sorry to all the U.S. licorice enjoyers. but yeah, like if you had told me, like I'd be really down with like chocolate with licorice in it, because chocolate with sea salt, I'm like, yeah, dig that. Sweet and salty? Yes, excellent. But the licorice adds really a cool twist to it. And so... I'm glad that that's how I spent my last chocolate bar. But now, obviously, I have to go back to Reykjavik because I'm out of chocolate.
Just to get more licorice.
Yeah. Not enough to land me in the ER. like... Oh, my God. Now I'm like, I wonder if I should add that to my repertoire, like bubbly water and then chocolate licorice.
Yeah. It's good for creativity, bubbly water and licorice.
That's so funny. Just be like, yeah, this is what I'm sponsored by. Oh my goodness. I guess it's funny. In the before times, I had more structures to the interviews. And now I'm just like, now I just get to talk to people. This is chill.
Which is the most chill one of my day.
I guess what would be... usually I would ask people, like, how do you balance things? But I guess at this point, like, what would be your advice to people who are creating during this time? Because it is, like you said, like, no one really wants to make a COVID-19 album. How would you advise people to kind of turn inward during this time to create?
Don't put too much pressure on yourself to be creative in this time. It's so easy to think that because we have all this time and solitude that we must use the time for something. We must use it to be creative. But I think that pressure we put on ourselves can be really counterintuitive. I think this is a time to do less. This is a time to slow down and just reflect and just take some time with our thoughts and understand the situation we're in and understand our feelings about it and be in a good place about it before we try to be creative. And that's just me talking from experience of where I kind of burnt myself was exactly that. It was not taking the time. It was trying to work my way through this whole situation, trying to use my work as a distraction for it. But I really just needed to step back and take a couple of weeks and, allow myself to curl up in a ball and think the world is ending for a couple of days and then get through it and, be reminded that things are always going to get better. Things are always going to be okay. And when you reach that point, I think you're ready to create something.
I'm nodding sagely. You can't see me, but I'm nodding. It's like those are wise words. That essentially, like, the only way out is, like, to go through it.
Yeah, and then when you're ready, use the opportunity to do the things that you just want to do. We are experiencing the kind of luxury of not having schedules right now. Mm-hmm. Everything that we put in our calendars has a question mark behind it because we never know if it's actually going to happen or not.
Yes.
As a musician, normally we're used to being under time pressure because tours and so on are often booked. In my case, they're booked over a year in advance. So like the tour that I'm supposed to be on now to promote this album, it was booked and even announced before I had written a single note for the album. So there's like,
almost, oh my God.
We're used to having this crazy time pressure on everything we do and like pressure to be creative. And now we don't. Now there is no schedule. Now there's just question marks on everything. And I think that is actually an opportunity to explore what we really want to be doing. And to question what we have been doing, and maybe we come to the conclusion that it's exactly what we want to be doing, but maybe we come to the conclusion that we want to change some things for before life starts up again in whatever way that would look like eventually. I think it's an opportunity to be just listening back to stuff that we liked when we were younger and remind ourselves why we were doing music in the first place.
I love that, kind of like there are no rules right now. So when we all come out of this, we get to essentially craft our own.
Yeah, I think it's also a wonderful opportunity for our industry to reshape. For example, with environmental causes, like touring industry is not good for the environment. And now that it's all shut down, we have an opportunity to eventually restart it in a different way and actually do things differently.
Yes. Yes. I spoke with the artist Aurora about that, which was really interesting about like how to do not a zero emissions tour, but like to offset one's carbon footprint when touring.
Yeah. We were experimenting with that last year. And I was really obsessed with trying to reduce the environmental impact of our tours. And just one example, like there's 20 people in my travel party when we're on the road, and let's say each of those people would drink 2-3 bottles of water per day. Mm-hmm. And then you have 50, 60 bottles of water every single day.
Oh, wow.
A tour that can last for 100 days or 150 days. And if you just count all of that, like how much plastic that can be. So just the simple act of us actually buying everybody in the crew a nice reusable bottle and changing our rider to be like, we just want a clean water fountain at the venue mm-hmm. instead of mm-hmm. water in bottles for the crew. Just these kind of small things actually make a huge difference when it comes to it. But on the other hand, we also realized that in the larger context, it was really hard to change things. Like, we wanted to do more. We wanted to do mm-hmm. a lot more, but the whole structure of the industry was so stuck in their ways that often it was just impossible, you know.
Yeah.
The infrastructure to do things differently just wasn't there. So we couldn't do as much as we wanted to. But now we have an opportunity to change that, actually.
That's very true. And I admire that you were working on that before. Like, I'm glad that you were thinking about that, because that is, like, I've never been on a tour of that scale. But I had thought about that a lot. Even, it's funny when you said about the water bottles, I was thinking about every green room I've been in generally has a bunch of water bottles and hummus.
Yes. the two, like, essentials of touring.
Exactly. Exactly. Little do they know that we all run on chickpeas. But it's like, now everybody knows. But yeah, that there aren't like reusable things. And I was just like, I'm so glad that you're thinking along those lines. And I do have hopes that, you know, when people do start touring again, it will look very different.
Yeah, I hope so too. I just saw yesterday Massive Attack put out a little short film about it as well. They were trying to change some things and they just posted a short film about their efforts yesterday.
Oh, awesome.
Online. It was really interesting to see. And they were also talking about the same thing. Like, right now is the time where we can change stuff.
Right.
While we're all on pause, is the time where we can change the ways of
yes.
doing stuff. So when we start again, they can be done differently. Right now is our opportunity. And I just hope that we don't mess it up, because it'll be so easy, because we'll be so eager to get back when we can, that we'll the danger is there that we're just so excited to get back that we just forget about all of that. But I really hope that we take our time getting back and do it properly and do it differently.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, about the kind of like turning and like towards yourself and being like, oh my God, everything is ending. And it's almost like going through that little like mini spiritual crisis and then coming out the other side. And I don't think people are going to forget that. Like, I don't know what action they'll take on it. I think that some people might want to deny it, but I think that that experience will stay with us. And I'm hopeful that people will take purposeful action, I guess is how I'd put it, where it's like, oh, that experience you had, instead of trying to bury that because it was painful, why don't you use that to actually create change and to do things a different way? Because otherwise, then I have the distinct feeling we would just lead ourselves directly into another one of those existential tailspins.
Exactly. this pandemic happened for a reason, you know. It kind of hurts to think about it, but this pandemic essentially is here because of the way we treat animals, the way our meat industry works. The way, you know, we will be in this situation again if we don't change our ways. So we have to do things differently when we come back.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like, across the board of the industries you mentioned and many more, that it's just like, yeah, it doesn't seem like we were on the right track because look what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a man-made thing, you know, and I don't mean that in the conspiracy way.
You're like, I mean that in the how we've treated the planet we ended up on way, not in like the yeah. creepy people shipping children and furniture way.
And there's other bigger crises that we already see on the horizon, like with climate change.
Yes. Yes.
And this, if anything, this should be a reminder that we need to change our ways.
Yes. So to act with purpose and to go within and to create right. from that place instead of haphazardly. Oh, thank you so much for joining me. This has been such a pleasure getting to talk to you.
Yeah, for me too. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
I was like, oh, podcast.
Yeah, podcast. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked what you heard, please head over to your preferred podcast platform and follow our podcast. You can also give us a 5-star rating or drop a glowing review. All of these things help more listeners to discover our podcast, and that means that then they can enjoy the wisdom of our wonderful guests. You can also come hang out with us on social media. We are on Instagram and TikTok under Why Not Both Podcast. Thanks again, and we will see you the next episode.